Okay, integral art?
Yeah, integral art.
It's a little harder to understand on the surface.
One of the things we did in the first year or so that Integral Institute was around, helped financially by our good friend Joe Firmage, is we had about 20 or 30 meetings with some 400 people of just the best known integrally informed practitioners really from around the world. And it was a really extraordinary year and very, very helpful in many, many ways. We arbitrarily broke it down into about 10 branches: integral art, integral education, integral politics, integral business, integral ecology, integral psychology. And we did it more just sort of manageable chunks. So we have about 40 or 50 people in each branch to begin with. And nowhere was the cross-branch fertilization more obvious than what came out of integral art. Because all the other branches made, I think, really fantastic contributions, and the discussions were really extraordinary. But integral art, what came out of that discussion, ended up being something that really changed the way everybody looked at integral and all the other branches, including me. So it was a really, really good example of integral in action, which is how these things all fit together, and what happens in any one of them affects all of them. And we started out, a lot of people would come in and the notions of integral, and they'd say, we're going to do integral business or integral medicine or integral psychology. And that meant that we're going to be all quadrants and all levels and all lines. And if I'm an integral leader, I'm going to have all 12 of my developmental lines at level 7. And I'm going to be, you know, just sort of Superman. It was just sort of a master of every dimension and niche and cranny of entire being in the world. And it was sort of an implicit kind of assumption that everybody was making. And then we got to integral art. And somebody said, well, what is an actual integral art object? What does that mean, an integral art painting, for example? Does that mean you have to paint all the quadrants and all the levels and all the lines, and you come up with this like Wagnerian super art that just descends on you and assaults every single dimension of your being? And there's Brunhilde singing, and there's music, and there's sound and light. And it really became obvious that really wasn't what integral art was about necessarily. And so we started making a distinction between what we would call something like comprehensive art versus integral art. And comprehensive art was sort of that kind of, you throw everything in, so to speak. And that's fine. I mean, there's movies, for example, tend to use text, and they use music, and they use images, and so on. And that's sort of covering more of the bases, so to speak. But you can also have a Zen master who just paints a bamboo stalk. Now, let's just assume for the sake of argument that a Zen master has integral consciousness, whatever that means, and yet just paints a single bamboo. So the question is, how do you define integral art under those circumstances? Because this is an integral person, and yet there's just a single bamboo shoot there. So what it made everybody sort of force them to confront was the idea that you could indeed have integral consciousness, but the objects of that consciousness did not themselves have to be comprehensive in every sense. In other words, you could be integrally informed no matter what you're doing, whether you're just painting a single bamboo stalk or just sweeping the floor or just being a waitress, or you know, you don't have to have all quadrants, all levels, all lines blaring out at all times. So we came to define integral art as any art produced by integral consciousness. And in that case, it would be the bamboo stalk. Now, if you actually look at a tradition like Zen, calligraphy is an art, and you can tell from nuances in calligraphy about the awareness of the Zen master who produced it. I mean, it's really astonishing, actually. So you're really reading, in a sense, the integral nature into just a simple object. So in any integrally informed consciousness, or any integral consciousness, can produce a piece of artwork. And if it's an authentic expression of that integral consciousness, then it's an integral art, whether it's an apple or a bug or a Buddha or a Wagnerian opera with all these things blaring. And that became important because the notion of integrally informed started to infuse through all the various branches. So we now speak of integrally informed medicine and integrally informed business and so on. What that means is, if I'm integrally informed medical practitioner and you come in and you have a problem, I'm integrally informed. So I'm going to do a quick diagnosis and see where your problem is. What quadrant? Is it a physical problem? Is it an emotional problem? Is it a family problem? Is it a financial problem? Four quadrants right there. Once I do a diagnosis, then I'm going to decide and talk with you and see how much you want to participate in your own cure. Now, some people are just, give me the pill, thank you, I'm out of here. That's okay. I'm integrally informed. If I make a judgment that that's good, then I can do that. I don't have to explain quadrants to you. I don't have to explain lines. I don't have to go into the whole shebang in order to do that. So I'm an integrally informed practitioner, but that doesn't mean that you're getting therapy in all four quadrants.
Sure. Now, it's easy to think of what it would mean to be integrally informed as an educator or in the profession of medicine.
Yeah.
But when it comes back to art, how would it change the calligraphy if the person was integrally informed or not?
Well, there we're using a simple analogy that the Zen master's enlightenment is the same as integral. And the analogy there was the better the enlightenment, the better the calligraphy. And that's a judgment that is made all the time in that. And that's what we're saying in that sense, is that if you did one have integrally informed consciousness at some point, that would express itself more authentically in art. And so that's the case as well. But it doesn't mean all great art is necessarily integral, because some people are still going to specialize in very narrow areas and do just fine. And that's, I don't see that changing a whole lot. What we're trying to do in the integral art branch, here's the type of thing that comes up a lot. We have people that are singers, they're dancers, they're painters, poetry. They themselves are growing and becoming more integral. They want to do that. They like the integrally informed approach. They're not satisfied with partial fragments and pieces. And so their lives are integrally infused. And then when they do art, they want to bring that vitality to that art. And then again, whether it's just painting a single bamboo stock, or whether doing a song or a performance or an entire rock opera, things are going to shift because more dimensions are being brought to bear on the product. Now, I'll give you a very simple example. We talked a little bit about David Deida and masculine and feminine aspects of spirituality in gross, subtle, and causal dimensions. David, who's a member of Integral Institute, and a lot of the art members of the Institute get together and work on things like, if you're a singer, Stuart Davis, for example, you can learn to sing with a gross body, sing with a subtle body, and sing with a causal body. The actual techniques and exercises for doing that. And once you do that, you can actually hear the difference in the performance. It's really astonishing, actually. And really great artists tend to sort of unconsciously do that anyway. So even if we're talking about a great Picasso or something, at least in that developmental line, he's really lighting up gross, subtle, and causal energies. I mean, there's a real brilliance about those kinds of geniuses, even if they're not integrally informed in a conscious, overt fashion. A lot of times they're really hitting on all of these dimensions in their own line, their own specialty. But in integrally informed art, what you're doing is your own consciousness is growing and deepening and becoming wider, more expansive, more loving, more caring, and more conscious. And that reflects in the artifacts that that consciousness makes, whether it's a song or a dance or a poem and so on. And so that's what we're actually working on in integral art, is how these people can bring that consciousness to bear on their artwork. And that part's very exciting. And some of them want to get into what we're calling comprehensive art. In other words, they actually want to do pieces and songs that try to evoke higher states in the audience. And so we actually talked about doing that. Certain exercises people can do, certain types of lyrics, certain types of presentation. Some of them are working on plays and operas that engage the audience with higher states and stages and so on. And that's more in the comprehensive art, the Wagnerian total art. And that's okay too, but it's still integrally informed consciousness that's important. So it changes the artist first and then the artwork next or later.
So is there some way for you that, as a theoretician, seeing all of these applications gives you a kind of gratification that you otherwise didn't have previously to a couple years ago?
Yes. And I'll tell you what it is mostly. To me, quadrants, levels, lines, these are not, you know, Wilberian things. I mean, first, second, and third person pronouns, I didn't invent that. I didn't put first, second, third person pronouns into language. It's just there. And these great states of consciousness, waking, dreaming, sleeping, I didn't invent that either. So it's not like I made something up, like, you know, deconstruction or some, you know, wacky philosophy, and then I'm sort of forcing that on everybody. It's that every major aspect that we've talked about, quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types, are dimensions of being that you already have. They're nothing I made up. All I've done, in a sense, is say, look, let's make sure we include all of them. And so that sort of package, aqual, all quadrants, all levels, all lines, all states, all types, is a summation, in a sense, of all the great researchers that have helped us point these things out. If it was just something I made up, it was like my Wilberian philosophy, and people were adopting that, I would get very, very nervous, because I would really be worried about screwing up, you know, and then I'd go, oh no, you know, 3,000 people have had their consciousness ruined forever because of something. But if people are getting in touch with waking, dreaming, deep sleep states, if they're getting in touch with their gross cell and causal energies, if they're taking into account first, second, and third person perspectives and honoring all of those, I feel great. It's fantastic. And I love the fact that I can sort of be a midwife, in a sense, towards bringing some of these things together. And that part is, that's just great.
As the theory has moved into application, have there been any examples where it just plain doesn't hit the ground? Doesn't work.
Well,
it doesn't,
if you just let go of
here.
Something, it'll hit the ground.
So well, you know what I mean, where it's yeah, like, well, that's good, that's good on paper, but it doesn't really apply when you try to put it in the real world.
Not to my knowledge, but let me immediately sort of qualify that and say I'm sure there are all sorts of ways that it's going to flub. One way that I can think of is finding ways to present the various topics has been sometimes difficult. And over about a 2-year period, people have really learned more effective ways to communicate it. Quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types. People love all of that except levels. Most people get nuts over levels. You have to be very, very careful how you do that for good reason. And so a lot of times it didn't fly because people would lead too hard with a level approach, for example, without explaining what it meant or why it was there or where it came from. And so a lot of people would present quadrants, I, we, and it, and everybody's comfortable with quadrants. Everybody understands that, and it really helps them differentiate these things. And then they would tend to next present developmental lines, and they would say, for example, you've all heard of, you know, musical intelligence and mathematical intelligence, emotional intelligence, spiritual intelligence. You can be very highly developed cognitively and not very highly developed morally. We all know people like that. And everybody nods their heads. They all agree with that. They understand modules, separate developmental lines, and so on. Then the person can say, do you notice that we just said some people are highly developed in some lines and not well developed in others? What does that mean? That means there are levels of development in these things. And now let's look at them very carefully. So it's a matter of skillful means in terms of how to present this. But in terms of these ingredients not working in a field, that hasn't happened very much because, again, they're dimensions of your own being. So it's like saying, I have a capacity to be aware of my own feelings, I have a capacity to be aware of your feelings, we, and I have a capacity to be aware of the objective world. So if I'm doing something like teaching somebody something or talking with somebody about something or driving somebody to work, am I going to do a better job if I take all of those things into account? Yes. I mean, how could you not? And so because of that, none of the approaches have simply fallen flat. Most of the disciplines are fields that people are in benefit by simply them paying attention to dimensions of their own being that are there, but they weren't using. I think that's why it catches on fairly quickly. And even though it seems complicated at first, once people get the hang of it, it's hard to go back because if they don't take this into account, they realize really how partial they're being, or they're leaving something important out, and they know it because these are aspects of their own being. And so once you sort of recognize that, then it's hard not to have it have some sort of impact on whatever it is you're doing. The difficulty comes in the how we express it in the theoretical terms we use and so on.